Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part. I am your host, Vincent Trewell. And yes, I've been gone for a while. But it's Black Friday, and no better a date for the resurrection of The Weird Part. So let's get started. Obviously, I have been gone for a little while, but nobody tuned into this podcast to hear about my medical problems. So we'll skip right over that and just pick up with the future, the present, the future, and what's going on. Got a few updates, and I've got some things coming up that I think you'll find of interest. Recently, I've had the great privilege of doing some investigations and spending some time with Stephen Schneider, aka Recluse, host of The Farm, a truly awesome podcast. If you're not an all-access Patreon of The Farm, you should be one. In fact, you could stop this right now, go to patreon.com and be a Patreon of The Farm, because it's totally worth it, and Stephen and a number of his associates are doing some really fascinating research, which I was able to be a part of, and that was great. Involved, and I won't speak of everything because of timing issues, of course, but I did get the chance to spend some time in Mendota Mental Hospital. Let me clarify, as a researcher on the grounds, not as a patient this time, though nobody knows what the future holds. Anyway, we were there with Jeff Finup, who is a real authority on strange things in Madison and Mendota and the area, and a lot of material, absolutely fascinating. I can't wait to discuss it when I'm more fully able to. But I do really appreciate being able to be a part of that. And we did go to Governor's Island, and a lot of stuff happened on Governor's Island, and it's some pretty interesting material. Also with Recluse, I was able to go with him and Clay Van Diver and do a real-world investigation that involves Bray Road, the Beast of Bray Road. We don't have it in a cage, okay? Spoiler alert. But we did do some fascinating stuff there and some things around Whitewater that I think people will find very interesting. So that kind of activated me to finally shake off the cobwebs and get The Weird Part going full steam. I've truly been inspired by what Stephen has done with The Farm, and that kind of kicked in that, you know, maybe I could get back and do what you love doing. And so here I am. And I can't say enough good things about those guys. I also had the chance to take a trip with just my immediate family and go and visit my 101-year-old grandmother in Richland County, and essentially drive every square mile of Richland County while she explained the history thereof, which, while it was a lot of white-knuckle driving, because the roads are not what I'm used to, it was some fascinating, absolutely irreplaceable history. And I learned a lot on this trip. And Richland County is very much in the Driftless region, which the Driftless wants to be heard. The Driftless region isn't like other places. It's the only place where I've had certain experiences, and a lot of people are drawn there, it seems, and there's just a lot of history and a lot of present weirdness in the Driftless region. And so I got to spend some time there with a person who has lived her whole life there, and it was very interesting, and I want to get more into that in full. I am also starting a new feature on The Weird Part, and that is weird news. There's just a lot of it, and I feel a lot of things don't get the attention they deserve or get perceived from the angles that they deserve. So I want to fill that gap, and I have some weird news to start with. This goes back to August, and the real story goes back a couple months before that. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but my source is CNN, as the original source is KSL TV5, an NBC affiliate. And the headline is, "Missing Missouri Dog was finally found 500 feet underground in an intricate cave system." So I don't know if you've heard about missing dog Abby, who was gone about 2 months, and then was found 500 feet underground, trapped in a cave. The cave explorers, the cavers or spelunkers, were not looking for a dog. They were mapping out a section of cave, and they came upon a dog 500 feet underground. How does that happen? The dog's alive. She's recovering. She's been returned to her owners, and she's apparently going to be fine. But how does a dog get 500 feet underground in an intricate cave system? I'll just leave the question hang there, but I'm mouthing the words Shaver Mystery, Darrow's, Goblins, you tell me, something to do with Hellier, I don't know. Dog found 500 feet underground in intricate cave system. Do things come out of the caves and hunt for prey, which they then take back either to feed on or to do rituals with? Or, yeah, I know that sounds crazy, but okay, so does a dog that's found 500 feet underground in a place that it'd be hard to get to if you really wanted to. What would be the attraction? Why the hell would a dog go there voluntarily? Some people have suspected the flooding occurred, which flooding definitely occurred, but did it wash her down there? Possibly. I mean, that could happen, I guess. Or did someone carry her down there? And why did they leave her there? I'm just bringing up some things that we're never going to know the answers. I feel 100% sure we will never know what happened to this dog. Other than, hey, at least she's alive, returned to her family, she's recovering her health. But if that's not one of the weirdest things you've ever heard, well, you must move in some pretty intricate circles. I would also like to mention a strange story, which has been, to my great surprise, hugely overlooked in the U.S. media. It was apparently broken by 14 Times, a British publication that I can't say enough good things about. It costs $100 a year to subscribe, but I bit the bullet and did it, and it's well worth it, because they stopped always having it available at Barnes & Noble, so I had to go and get it. Subscription. But yes, it's a big story in the UK, and for some reason it's been overlooked here. But the late artist, Thomas Kincaid, who died in 2012, whose work is familiar, you've seen it if you live in America. You have seen his work. He did what was often derided as kitschy pop culture low art, which I feel is an unfair description completely. But he painted a lot of heartwarming cabins and, you know, a farmhouse at twilight type pictures. And he was, for much of his life, considered very squeaky clean. He was very popular in the evangelical Christian community, and he painted old-fashioned, somewhat Norman Rockwell-esque landscapes and pictures of buildings, mostly. But apparently, he had a totally other side and was living what some would describe as a double life. He, in fact, used a alternative name, which, not that there's anything wrong with that, as you well know. But yes, he used another name, but he used the name of, and I'm going to mangle it, but it's Kincaid spelled backwards with the E as an abbreviated first name. So E Dinkage, I'm fumbling it, but you can spell out Kincaid, put it in reverse, make the E with a period after it be the first name. And he'd use that name, and he was a biker. Like, he would ride a Harley and go to rallies and party and live quite a different life than what his buying public was aware of. And that might be, you know, interesting enough, but it wasn't just him doing a little Jekyll and Hyde to take a break from having to be perfect all the time. It was, he also painted hundreds, at least, of other paintings that were very not Thomas Kincaid. He painted as the other person as well. And his family is currently keeping those paintings under wraps, but it is a fascinating story that cries out for further investigation. And really, I just want to see what those other paintings were. Were they a dark side? I have no idea what they show, because they haven't been displayed publicly at all. But it's just a fascinating tale to me. But I would like to see the pictures, I really would. Upon further review, I think E. Dacnik would be how you pronounce that alternative name, his other identity. E. Dacnik is the best I can get out of it. In recent news, and this has been within just the last couple days, they finally got the Artemis rocket to launch, and it will be sending a vessel, a probe, to orbit the moon. And the White House released future plans for lunar exploration. And so apparently the U.S. is definitely going back to the moon, and probably Russia, China, and I would assume several other countries are going to be making their way there as well. Which to me just begs the question, what has changed? Why did we go to the moon 9 times and then stop? And stop for 40-some years, and now suddenly we're back, and the moon's important again, and we're going to build bases there, and we're going to do stuff there. And why the hell weren't we doing that in the 80s? The last time we went to the moon was 1979. Seriously, what caused that gap? Why was it important then, and it stopped being important, and now it's important again? There is no mainstream explanation for that. I don't care who says what. There is no, within the acceptable bounds of what can be said on mainstream media, there is no explanation for that 40-some year gap and sudden return. Something has changed. Something that we're not being privy to. I don't pretend to know what that involves, but all the possibilities are really weird. Is there some authority on the moon that has given us permission to return? Did something change in the political power balance between our government and non-human governments? Or breakaway society governments? Or what? Something has happened. Because suddenly, the Chinese are landing things on the moon. India sent a robot to the moon a couple years ago. It wasn't completely successful, but they still did put one there. Suddenly, all the major countries of the world are doing something on the moon, after completely ignoring it for decades. Maybe not completely, but for practical purposes, completely ignoring it for decades. We were able to get there when we were doing the math with blackboards as portrayed in one of my favorite films, Hidden Figures. That was real. That happened. But then there was no follow-up for decades. And suddenly we're going back there in full force. And if you'll notice, there's a strange continuity. The Trump administration and the Biden administration have precious little in common. Almost nothing. Except they're both really into exploring the moon. I have a feeling this has very little to do with either man holding the office of president, but that people in significant positions of quiet power feel that this is a very big deal, and that whoever's standing out front, whoever's holding the figurehead office, we're going to the moon, and we're going to do important things there. I just am really wish I could know what changed. What happened that we didn't do this in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, and we waited till now? What's going on? Why are we doing that? And why didn't we do it before? Because I've always wished for a more active space program. I love the space program. I don't for a second deny that there's been fakery and there's been denials of things that I can clearly see with my own eyes. As I'm fond of saying, and I'm referring to the Mars exploration, which I love, but if NASA found Mount Rushmore, they'd say it was caused by the wind and gradual blowing away of the rock. They would not admit that anything was constructed, no matter what they found. Okay, wind erosion caused Mount Rushmore would be what they'd find. And a lot of people mocked it when what appeared to be a very small statue was found on Mars by the rover. But it had arms. I don't know of the wind to cause the curve things to have arms. Okay? And they said, well, it was only so big, it wouldn't really amount to anything. I said, well, how big's a crucifix? There are crucifixes of that size. This is a statue of something. And it was never explained. It never has been explained. It's easily Googleable. You can look it up. And nobody was saying it was a living being. It's a statue. And it's only a few inches high. But it's clearly a manufactured object. Somebody carved something, okay? And that was found on the surface of Mars. So I'm not rubber stamping everything NASA says. That's quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. But I do believe in having a space program. And I fully support it. And I just wish that we'd never stopped going to the moon. But I have always suspected there must have been a reason. And that reason has never been shared with the public. And at the same time that we stopped going, the Soviets stopped going and stopped caring about that. And no other country stepped up to really go there and get involved. And now suddenly everybody's going there. I don't know, but I know the answer is A, secret, B, really weird and mind-blowing if it ever comes out. But I suspect that it will come out because we're going to be going there. We're going to be doing stuff. And the climate is changing, you know? I didn't mean that literally, but I meant the political climate is definitely changing about space exploration. It's now suddenly going back to being big and important, which I felt it never should have stopped. In a somewhat related story, there is still scientific uncertainty of whether there may be signs of life on Venus. Now, when I say that, people are quick to point out that the surface temperature is something insane, like 900 degrees, and that when the Soviets landed two probes on Venus, they melted within hours. But what people forget is that to have life on a planet, you don't need to have it on the surface. Life could exist up in the clouds, thousands and thousands of feet in the air, that where it's cold. And if it's 900 degrees on the ground, but it might be a much more moderate temperature while there's still enough atmosphere for life to exist. That is one possibility. And to me, it's certainly a possibility worth exploring. And hopefully we will be taking some interest in Venus as well. So yes, there's a lot going on in space all of a sudden. And I appreciate the exploration, but I just wonder why the gap existed and what caused it to end. In the world of weird crime, there is new events happening in the Jaminet Ramsey case. I plan to devote a soon upcoming future episode to that case and to my own theories and how they've drastically changed over the years. However, currently, Jaminet Ramsey's father is petitioning the governor to have evidence retested, and DNA evidence, that is. My source for that is CNN and KIRO7, local news, and there is interest by the family in further testing of DNA evidence collected, but at least allegedly still untested, that may come up with some answers. And I'm tipping my hand a bit, but I used to be a Ramses are guilty as hell person, and my views on that have changed drastically and, frankly, completely reversed. And I would have to say that if Mr. Ramsey was guilty of anything, do you think he'd be asking the governor to look into this some more? That's not usually what guilty people who got away with stuff do, okay? That's what a grieving father would do. It's not what a killer would do who managed to get away with this crime. Is, hey, I want to call the governor and have him look into it some more. I want more evidence tested. That's not what guilty people do. But I've got a lot more to say about that, and there will be an upcoming full episode on my theories on that case and why I pick apart some other theories. But yes, the Ramsey family is requesting retesting and testing of DNA evidence that has not been tested in that case, which is one of the cases of the century, one of the strangest things, and still remains very much unsolved. Staying with the subject of weird crime for a moment, I will be doing a full-length episode on the crime too bizarre to be true, but it was true, the suicide of Bill Sparkman, the census taker who in 2009 was thought to be murdered, was found bound, killed, and with the word fed written across his chest in magic marker. This absolutely seemed like a politically motivated murder, but looking further into it, I have had to accept that it was in fact a suicide, and that Mr. Sparkman arranged his suicide to look like a murder, which is something incredibly rare, but not alone. And I want to look at a couple of other suicides that were staged to look like a murder, because such a thing almost never happens. The reverse happens, unfortunately, fairly regularly, but not regularly, but often enough that it's a trope, making a murder look like a suicide. Damn near nobody makes their suicide look like a murder, but Bill Sparkman did, and some other people have too, and that should be an interesting episode. Also, I will be starting a new feature on The Weird Part. I want to do some listener stories. For what it's worth, I'm off Twitter, so my email is not constantly in a swamp of just Twitter messages. That didn't happen because of the new management, but it didn't entirely not happen because of the new management. I've been meaning to get off Twitter for a while, so I'm done with Twitter. So my email is open, vincenttrewell@gmail.com. vincenttrewell@gmail.com. If you have had an experience, if you have had some sort of encounter and you want to talk about it, contact me and we'll make arrangements and you can discuss it on air. I'm really looking for cryptids, encounters of all sorts. They may be abduction, they may be spiritual. Well, this is a pretty wide open show. So please, by all means, if you are an experiencer, even a one-time experiencer, and I think, honestly, we're all at least one-time experiencers, vincenttrewell@gmail.com. Tell me your story, and I'll get in touch with you. So, that's something I really look forward to doing, is getting some reader stories on there. I would also like to just say briefly that I made some off-the-cuff remarks about going to Mendota. Going to Mendota was excellent, and we saw some fascinating things that I can't wait to talk about. But I did make a bit of a joke of I wasn't going there as a patient. I felt free to do that because I have never hidden my own mental health issues. I've had some, and I've spent some time in a mental hospital, albeit that was with the VA, not Mendota, but I don't want to stigmatize anybody and in any way discourage somebody who needs help from getting help. If you need help, get help. I did many years ago, and it undoubtedly saved my life. No doubt about that. So yes, if you think you might need psychiatric, psychological care, then you probably should look into that. Yes, do that, okay? Get help while you can. And I just want to make that clear. I don't want to add to the stigma of mental illness because I deal with some mental illness on a daily basis. And it's what it is. But I'm here and I'm alive and I'm having a good life because I reached out when I needed to. And that wasn't once or twice. Okay, that's been an ongoing thing for many years. So I meant nothing bad by the Mendota joke there. And I don't rule out the prospect at some point in my life I might actually check into Mendota as needed. Anyway, I just wanted to clarify there. But let's move along for the moment. Fairly recently, a friend of mine, fellow podcaster, Jason Andrews of Paranormal Patio and Beyond the Patio, released a excellent episode in which he talks about caves and caving and speaks with a guest who does a lot of cave exploration. And it's well worth listening to, and it's well worth talking about the underground world. And I was spurred to think of that because I was talking about the space program. And I look at cave exploration much like the space program. I think it's a fascinating, really interesting topic that should be explored by other people. I've been in tourist caves, but I would never go caving. I weigh somewhat over 250, and I don't need to be stuck in some horrible situation. Likewise, I don't want to be in a capsule where you're going to be there for the next X number of months. Not for me, but I really support other people doing this exploration, and I'm fascinated with the results. But yes, by all means, check out Beyond the Patio, and basically everything that Jason does, it's really interesting. All right. Upcoming, I will be appearing on Conspiranormal with the excellent Adam Sane and Sir Fael Stevenson. Can't wait for that. That's coming up in the near future. And I'm still writing the updates on a weekly basis for Soraya's Where Did the Road Go? So I do have a presence in this world, and I'd like to really thank everybody in this paranormal community who's helped me out when I was ill for a while and going through some things. And this has just been a great community to be a part of. Absolutely love it. Have made some true friends, which I'll tell you, I'm 51 years old. You don't tend to make a lot of new friends in your 50s, but I have, thanks to this. And I don't mean this podcast. I mean this community, of which this podcast is a small part. And so, yes, thank you all. This has been the update episode, but the weird part is back. And you'll be hearing a lot more from me. And I'm going to make being a Patreon worth something. And also, I released a novella, but we'll talk about that another time, when I can really promote it, really pump it up. Anyway, thank you for listening. This is the weird part. I'm Vincent Truewell. Good night.